This episode is brought to you by Heidy. Imagine kicking back while a HIPAA-compliant AI scribe writes your soap notes for free. Yes, you heard us right. Heidy is free. I'm Dr. Tom, Heidi's CEO and founder, and we started Heidy to stop clinicians wasting their life on clinical documentation. Heidy transforms your consult babble into crisp, clear soap notes, personalizing itself with every edit. One day, Heidy will be your AI resident, looking through research, explaining plans, and doing anything you don't want to. If you currently pay for an AI scribe in your practice, you should swap to Heidy. We'll even credit you for anything you've already paid. Dive into the description for the link and make your practice the envy of every stethoscope in town. Sign up and watch Heidy work its magic, all for free, because you've got better things to do.
What can mind readers, tarot card readers, and fortune tellers teach us about interacting with our patients? Stay tuned and find out. Hey, this is Brad Block, host of The Physician's Guide to Doctoring. This is a personal and professional development podcast for physicians where we have experts on the show that try to teach us everything we should have been learning while we were memorizing Krebs cycle. Welcome back to the podcast. On today's episode, we have something a little bit different than we've done before. We have a mentalist. So the first question is going to be that. We'll get into that, but let's first introduce him. So Jonathan Pritchard is the founder of Zavant with a Z Enterprises and the author of multiple books focused on the power of applied psychology. And he got his understanding of applied psychology from the School of Hard Knocks. So for 15 plus years, he's toured the world as a mentalist, which is a type of entertainer specializing in apparently reading minds, predicting the future, instant hypnosis, and other impossible skills. Eventually, he realized his talents could do more than entertain people. And that's when he began consulting to the world's largest companies. Currently, he's brought in to share his secrets with sales teams, delivery teams, and anyone else who needs to deliver results in high-stakes environment. And what higher stakes are there than your health? And you can find him, if you're interested in looking him up, at jonathanpritchard.me. So, Jonathan, thank you so much for being on the podcast.
Hey, thanks for having me. I appreciate the invitation.
What is mentalism? What is it? Let's start there.
Mentalism is an entertainment art form, a stage theater kind of show. It's kind of a specialty in the realm of magic. So if you think of stage magicians or doing illusions, and then you've got the guys who love doing card tricks or coin tricks and rope tricks and all that kind of stuff. Somewhere in the back room of this mansion called magic, probably in the basement, are these guys called mentalists that are using communication skills to make it look like they could read minds, do telepathy, prognosticate, all those kinds of supposedly supernatural skills. You can make it look real by leveraging really good communication skills. So while the stage illusionists are using big boxes and mirrors and that kind of thing, mentalists are leveraging applied psychology, showmanship, and moxie, and that's pretty much it. So it's really a lot of information architecture and kind of the theory of how we understand reality, and then making that work for us rather than for the audience. And to me, what makes it appropriate and ethical, as my mentor, James Randi, said, we are honest liars. We tell them that we're going to lie to them. We're in a theater doing this. We're not in a church. We're not starting a cult. So as long as we are up front,
you don't have a sign on the side of the road that says, "Will like tarot card reading will tell you your future," right? There's plenty of those on. I'm on Long Island. We've got the Long Island Medium, so there's plenty of that around.
Oh yeah, we can go down that rabbit for hours.
This is a physician by this. We're talking about being a doctor.
Exactly. Good. Thank you. The short of it is that Randi, my mentor, had $1 million in the bank as a challenge to anybody who claimed to be legit. And he goes, okay, if you're so legit, show us in a situation where you can't cheat your way, and I'll give you $1 million. And weird, nobody got past preliminary testing. Strange how that works. Yeah, I'm firmly on the I don't think so side of the equation.
So then what was your foray into this world?
started, I was a poor kid growing up in a trailer park. So all I could afford was to check out the magic book library is really it. So I read a lot of the books at the library, and then card tricks was pretty much it, because you could buy a couple dollar deck of cards and use it. Okay, I can't afford those big illusions, but I can use playing cards. Then you can do mind reading tricks with playing cards. And then the mind reading stuff seemed to freak people out more than some fancy cut you could do. That's basically like juggling with your hands. You're like, all right, that's not nearly as much fun as freaking people out. So let me go down that rabbit hole. So that's what I was interested in. Then I met Randy in college, worked with him for 4 years, helping design testing protocol for the challenge, and wound up working with him for about 13 years, helping run his annual science conference. So that was kind of my master's class in advanced psychology and understanding how people believe things and how people believe weird things, and then understanding those mechanisms at the foundation level help you connect to strangers because you know how their trust system works. It's hacking the fundamental operating system of humans and then being able to write programs in their own hardware that help you connect more easily.
So I hope the listeners are hearing how this works in our lives, right? Because of everything you just said applies to us. People believe weird things, and we have to work with that. We also need to build trust in a very short period of time and explain complicated things in that time and get them to believe that we know what we're talking about and that it's in their best interest to follow our instructions. So a lot of what you're saying in mentalism applies to our lives. So it applies to our professional lives. So I'm glad you phrased it that way, because it really saves me a lot of effort in explaining why did you bring in this
circus carny? What is he doing here? I'm going to ignore this episode. Yeah. And that's really why I started doing the corporate consulting and speaking about this stuff, because the magic world, they're all about guarding their secrets. And they would rather keep those secrets to themselves, but they're interested in the secrets. So they don't really go outside the world of magic to realize, holy cow, this stuff can literally save lives and help people make millions of dollars helping millions of people by being better communicators.
Or deceiving. It could be used for good, could be used for evil.
Well, that's kind of my big thesis, is if you want to be taken more seriously and more effective at telling the truth, you have to get really good at lying first. Because most people who are saying, I'm being honest, think that honesty is the sole requirement for convincing or somebody else understanding what you're talking about.
Okay. Elaborate.
But it's not. It's not at all. You have to understand how that other person's hearing what you're saying, what their model of reality is, how they're approaching this conversation. You have to have a complete understanding of their theory of mind, their model of reality. Then translate what's in your head into terms that they'll understand and accept, and then use to come to the conclusion that you need them to understand.
So the mistake that some of us may be making when we walk into a patient's room is that we are living in the same reality that they're living in. And what you're saying is that's not true.
We're all living in our own reality, and the really good communicators ask enough questions to understand that other person's reality.
Okay.
And then the really smart folks can put what they need to say inside that other context.
Okay. So then how do we start realizing, or those questions about discovering another person's reality? How do we do
that? Yeah. The method for reading minds, if you're not psychic, is pretty straightforward. You ask questions. However, that assumes a certain baseline of trust. Because if there is no trust between us, I'm not going to give you any truth.
Okay.
And even still, my truthfulness may not be in alignment with reality. So you've got to know your stuff cold. You've got to know this world perfectly, our world and their world.
Okay.
Because when a patient comes, they're not telling you what the diagnosis is. They're not telling you what the problem is, for the most part. They can only describe the effects of this root issue. So the best they could possibly do is to tell you what is bothering them, not what's creating those situations that are bothering them.
I will tell you, sometimes they even struggle with that.
Exactly.
It's sometimes really hard to describe your symptoms. They can be really nebulous and you have trouble putting them into words. And sometimes they'll put them into words that, to your point about reality, I would use to describe a different sensation. And so Right. We've got to clarify those terms, but we're doing that, right? And so I think we can make a couple of assumptions already, and tell me if I can't, is that as physicians, we know the material. We know, you know, what they're coming in for to, we don't know the diagnosis, but once we determine what that is, you know, we know the medicine well enough to be able to help them. I think we should take that variable out of the picture.
Almost. I would almost agree with you, because knowing what the answer is doesn't mean that they're going to understand that you know the right answer.
Agreed.
So that's why you have to ask them enough questions to understand how they're putting everything, and then ask enough questions to really understand how to diagnose. But you have to back up one step and then explain their explanation to them. You have to say, so what you were saying is that you've got this weird icky feeling and it feels like demons or whatever, however they explained it. You have to say your understanding so clearly that they go, he's the first person to understand this. He's the only one out of every doctor I've talked to that understands.
Okay. So what you're saying is, as we're asking our questions to, because this is what we always do, right? You take a history, we call it. You find out what are their symptoms, how long they've been going on, the severity, things that make them better and worse, and what they've tried. Fine. But, and then we repeat it back to them using their language.
Yes. Yes. Okay.
And so
most people go, oh yeah, I understand, and then move on.
Yeah.
But that person doesn't understand that you understand, because I didn't hear you explain what it is that you understand. So then if you take that time to say it back to them, they'll either go, wow, you've got it perfectly. But most of the time it triggers something extra and they'll go, yeah, oh, and I also forgot about this.
Yeah.
And then you get that extra bit of information. But that's the key to getting their buy-in that the diagnosis you're about to give them is correct.
Okay. I would add something else. I would say, on top of just explaining the symptoms using their language, add something else about how it's affecting them either socially, emotionally, professionally. Like, not only is it causing these symptoms, but it's affecting them in other aspects of their lives. And that goes to the trust building. Now they understand understand that they're not just a patient, they're a person. And that goes towards
Exactly. Understanding
the reality and their trust building.
Which is an old school technique of tarot card readers.
Okay.
Who, once they dial into your situation and why you're here, they've talked to thousands of people. They've seen some version of you hundreds of times. And every single time that a version of you says everything that you said, they're probably also dealing with this and this. So then when you say exactly this and they go, oh, and I bet this is also bothering you and this is also bothering you, you're going, holy cow, they're psychic. How in the world did they know? There's no way they could know that. Well, this is the first and only time that you're going to a tarot card reader, but this is 10,000th time that this tarot card reader has talked to a person. in this dynamic, right? So the kind of yes and of, oh, and I bet this is also bothering you as well, that demonstrates that I have mastery of this environment. I know your problems. I've seen this before. You're in good hands. And because I can describe even other symptoms that you didn't think to mention, that demonstrates to you that I not only understand you, I understand your problem. And that's when you really get the buy-in.
That's really interesting. I was giving a lecture to some med students the other day, and I had them, you know, tell me about a patient they saw recently, and we were going to dissect it and figure out what was going on and teach them how to think about it. And because I've been doing this for so long and I see the same things over and over, within them describing the patient in like the first line, I was able to say, okay, I know what the diagnosis is. And they were like, how could you? And the answer is these. And so what you're saying is all of these mentalists and tarot card readers, and they, because we're not the unique snowflakes that we think we are, they're able to tell us what we're going through and thinking because we're just like everybody else.
Exactly. And therein lies an even bigger challenge to folks who are burdened with the ability to see and understand, especially quickly, because in that first line, you've got it. In that lecture dynamic, okay, cool. It's really fun.
It was a neat parlor trick. Yes.
Exactly. In a diagnosis environment, it's off-putting. No, I didn't explain enough for you to understand. You don't get it. And it's counterproductive.
Yeah.
So you have to hear people out long enough for them to believe they've given you enough that they think you need to understand what the problem is. So you could understand the whole thing in two sentences, but you need to listen for another 5 minutes for them to feel heard enough that they believe you would understand their issue. And that gap is real difficult, especially if you're not a patient person. I'm not actually all that patient, but that waiting is very difficult. You're like, no, I got it. Like, no, there's no way you could have gotten it. I'm like, yeah, this is, I got it, right? So it's actually counterproductive to changing minds, to getting that buy-in, to jump ahead and to assume that because I understand, we can move forward. That person doesn't feel heard, and that's step one of persuasion.
I definitely want to get into persuasion. But before we do, let's say we have some, because we're on that topic of, you know, you move too quickly and now you haven't built that trust. Let's say it seems like you have, right? Like I listened to their story, I parroted back to them what they said, you know, but clarified the story. So it was more of a chronological thing. I dialed into how it's affecting them emotionally. And yet at the end of the visit, they're still resistant. They're like, you weren't listening. You're not here. You're just like everyone else. You're just not listening. Is there anything else that you can use in that situation? Any other arrows in your quiver?
That is a challenging situation to be in because there's not really much else you can do.
Okay.
Besides, tell me more about that.
Yeah.
And to be willing to be present with their frustration. And it's kind of from the world of sales, but also tarot card readers and anybody else that gets along by getting along with people, which is to full on acknowledge the situation, their frustration, their emotions, whatever you need to compliment them, not in a patronizing way, but in a way of saying, I actually like seeing you this bought in or this involved in your care. However, it makes sense to compliment.
That makes sense. I am glad you are so passionate about finding a solution to your problem, that you're willing to go to so many different doctors until someone's able to figure out. I'm glad you are such an advocate for yourself. Ooh,
exactly.
I like that. That's great. That's good stuff.
So you have to acknowledge, compliment, then address the concern.
Okay.
The challenge is jumping to that conclusion of going, I know what they're concerned by. I get it. this is the silliest thing for them to be concerned by. This is a non-issue. I'm amazing at what I do. They shouldn't be worried about this. Here's why you're wrong, is how that comes across. When you directly address their concern without acknowledging the concern and then saying, this lets me know that you're a client or a patient that I'm going to enjoy working with, yeah, because I want you to understand. Because if you didn't understand, that means that this is going to go sideways sooner rather than later. So please ask all the questions. And for this one, here's how I think about it. Now you're addressing it.
Okay. That's great. That's great advice. So the persuasion you're about to get into, right? And so are there elements of persuasion? Because sometimes that happens. Sometimes it's because they've bought into some misinformation, you know, from a friend or something they read online, or sometimes they're so attached to their diagnosis that they really need, like, they've seen four other doctors and they've been telling them all of the, you know, that this is their diagnosis. And now you're number five because they're not getting better. You think it's something different, but now they're attached to that diagnosis, right? There might be a bunch of different reasons why, or just, you know, vaccination for the pediatrician, right? Oh, it seems like a lot for such a little baby, right? There are plenty of opportunities where we need persuasion. What are some of those tools that we can use to help us help them?
Yeah, that's a tricky situation again, because it is a function of time. The longer you have, the more successful you're going to be.
And that we don't have. We don't have that luxury.
And you don't have a lot of time there. Like, without even getting into the mechanism of how persuasion works, it's kind of like somebody's on an airplane and then you and I are having a bet and you're like, hey, could you persuade him to order cranberry juice instead of Diet Coke? And you're like, eh, maybe. I might be able to bribe him. I don't think I could persuade him into believing that I want cranberry juice over wanting Diet Coke. But given long enough, national advertising campaign, cranberry juice is great for you. Like, you spend enough money in media to repeat a message long enough yeah, times, you're going to affect people's belief systems. So the longer you have to make it happen, the better chances you're giving yourself. That's why if you do understand the mechanism of persuasion, it can be as quick as it could possibly be and no longer. But it's not going to be any shorter.
Okay.
But it could still happen much faster than you think.
So what's that mechanism? We're running out of time.
Yeah. So it's seven steps.
Okay.
And it is understanding how you think about your problem and why you think that's the problem in your own words, in your own framework, in your theory of mind, understanding of the universe. Here's what the real problem is and why. Go point by point, dismantling their explanation for their problems, and then say, and now that I've fully explained the problem better than you did, because you're also dealing with this and this, right? And they go, yeah, wow. I now understand, he understands my situation and why I'm in this situation, but he does understand the problem better than me. So that's the real problem. And he explained why that's the real problem and the cause of all these symptoms that I'm experiencing. Okay, now I'm willing to listen. Then you say, so here's the real solution. And here's why. Then you have to outline every detail of the solution, point by point, for why this is the problem and how this detail eliminates that element of the problem. And this detail will eliminate that part of the problem. And you have to go through point by point to dismantle the problem. So that's the solution and why. Then the last step is, and here's the next thing to do about it. Because if you think about it like a map, they think they know their map really well. And like, okay, I know every nook and cranny of this town and I can drive blindfolded. Then you have to show them you are not where you actually are. I came to find you. I know where you are. And I can get you where you want to go because I understand all of this better than you.
Okay.
So when you've walked them through what the real problem is and what the diagnosis is, and for this problem, here's the recommended solutions, here's the treatment, they are no longer in a universe that makes sense because they know their problem inside and out. They've been living with this issue for who knows how long.
Yeah.
So the problem is the familiar, and you just took them away from everything that they thought they knew for sure.
Okay.
So it is a bizarrely disorienting experience to be given the answer because it's not what I thought it was. If it really was, I wouldn't have this problem anymore.
Yeah.
So by virtue of having this problem longer than who knows, like whatever time frame you want to put on it, by definition, you don't know what the problem is.
Got it. So if you had the diagnosis as the other people that you've seen before, then why aren't you improving? Well, because right. maybe that isn't the diagnosis. Let's open up the realm of possibility that it's something different. I'm not right. saying I know what it is, but it's possible I do. Just leave me open that possibility.
Right.
And then you
so that's,
start building
that's why
your
it's step by step. You can't okay. jump steps because you're giving them room to wiggle out of your understanding.
Kind of
because
rationalized.
If you, yeah. Right. Because if you don't explicitly state it better than they could in two sentences, there's still room for, well, he doesn't get it.
Yeah.
And if he doesn't get it, then there's no way that his diagnosis is correct. Therefore, the treatment he's giving me is not correct at all in any way, shape, or form. So it would actually be bad for me to take that medicine or go through that treatment.
Yeah. Okay.
So that's why you can't skip steps. It's step one all the way through.
That's why it's called building trust, because you got to build strong base and then everything goes on top of that.
Yeah. My theory is that we start with a net positive trust. Even people that have been burned really badly in analogy terms, they still want to trust that you know what you're doing. They desperately yeah. want you to fix this, hopefully.
They made the right? appointment.
Right.
That's why they walked in the ER. Yeah.
Exactly. So they want to trust and they do trust. It's your game to lose. So it's more about don't do anything that erodes the tiny bit of trust you already have.
Yeah.
And then never getting out of alignment with that integrity of being aligned with, I want to be better. I want you to be better. We are both working to the same goal. So that your thoughts, words, and actions are all aligned with that same goal with them.
There's one more thing that I wanted to talk about before we close. And that's something I've heard you talk about, where do people know what they want? Because what we're trying to do is we're trying to help them achieve their health goals, right? Their goals for themselves, not our goals for them, right? And so... But how do we do that, right? So first, do they know what they want? And if not, how do we get them to recognize what they genuinely want?
This is the single most important question, I think, like in life, really.
Yeah.
Because people aren't great at understanding themselves. It takes so much work and effort over time. That's why Kung Fu is called skill acquired through great effort over time. And Kung Fu is really hard to learn. So the fact that we have feelings and we have thoughts doesn't mean that they are accurate or in alignment with what we really want.
Okay.
So asking somebody what they want is near useless. You know what they want by looking at the actions they take. It's almost impossible to behave out of alignment with your fundamental values. You can talk all day long, but you're always going to embody your fundamental values.
I see people all the time who don't do that, right? They want to be, let's talk about just like lifestyle choices, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like they don't want to be a smoker anymore, but they have a substance use disorder. They can't stop because of the addiction, right? So... How would you explain that with what you just said, right?
That is the stated is not the actual.
Okay.
Right.
So they don't want to quit.
It depends Well, it depends on how deep your theory of control goes.
Okay.
For behavior.
Okay.
Right? Like, it's control over the chosen. So if you're saying it's not chosen, then there is no control.
Okay.
Right? So if we limit it to controlled behavior, decided behavior, that's an easier environment to talk about. But it's saying, I want six-pack abs. I've always wanted six-pack abs. I don't. Because I'm not doing the things.
But I haven't wanted them enough to do them. I'd want it if it was passively, I can just snap my fingers like a mentalist might, and I've got six-pack abs. But I'm not willing to commit the time and the effort.
Because it's not of value to me. It is not in alignment with my values. I'm living out my values, and my values get me close, but not quite there, right? Okay. So that's why if you want to see somebody's values, don't listen to what they say about them. Look at the life that they're living, and that gives you a much better, quicker look at it.
Okay.
Right? So you kind of have to find leverage. You have to find leverage, which requires applying force. Psychological, emotional, temporal, whatever.
Yes.
And oftentimes it's family. Why do you want to start running?
Yeah.
I want to be around for my daughter's high school graduation. It's not me. I couldn't care less about me, but I don't want her to grow up without a dad.
Yeah.
Therefore, I'm going to take better care of myself. And it's that weird thing that we go out of our ways more for our friends than we do ourselves when we live with ourselves 24/7. So oftentimes future pacing and putting you into future you and thinking of future you as a good friend who's going to be coming to visit in a couple of weeks. And wouldn't you want that guy to show up at the door with a better situation than what you're facing right now?
And six-pack abs.
And those six-pack gorgeous abs in oblique lighting. Yeah.
Well, this is a super interesting discussion. And I love how it really does, mentalism really does fit into healthcare, right? It's understanding people. It's getting to know them, getting to trust them. And just learning about them and then using that to your advantage to help them.
Exactly. So, and in a weird way, you have to care about them more than they care about themselves, which is a difficult situation to be in. So that's why I always like to end with fully engaged and 0% attached. So it's that Zen koan of let go or be dragged kind of thing. It's just like, listen, man, you're holding on to this and that's why it's dragging you around everywhere. You can't be more responsible for their choices than they are, but you can care about them more than they care about themselves.
Yeah. No, and I think that actually we've talked about like compassion and empathy in the show, and that really works with that as well. That works. Mm-hmm. And then because you've got, you know, 25 more patients to see that day, so you've got to care. And then you've got to care just as much about the next person, so.
Yeah.
I love it. So if people want to learn more about you, jonathanpritchard.me, and then where can we find you on social media?
I hang out on Twitter most often, and it's the Zavant there. The easiest URL is icanreadminds.com. I own that, and then that's the hub, and then all my different projects and stuff spoke off from there.
Fantastic. Well, thank you so much for your time and your expertise.
Thanks again from Heidi. Elevate your practice with a free AI scribe, zero cost, HIPAA compliant, and time saving. Ready to swap? We've got you covered for past AI scribe expenses. Head to HeidiHealth.com, get started, and make your practice the envy of every stethoscope in town.
Thanks for listening. I have a favor to ask. You listened to the episode until the end, which means you either fell asleep or you really liked the episode. So please share it or like it. Or comment on a social media post, or write us a 5-star review, something. It would really help me out. And maybe what you learned from this episode can help someone else too. The views expressed in this episode are those of the interviewer and interviewee, and don't represent the views of their employer or even their significant other. even though the magic of podcasting make it sound like I'm talking directly to you. This is not a doctor-patient relationship, and this is not medical advice or financial advice or really any advice. Thank us again for listening to The Physician's Guide to Doctoring.